Today we are in a final topic of my part. So we are talking about nanophotonics. So we are going from electronics to photonics. And basically this is a brief outline. So a little bit what is photonics, what is applications. And then we go to plasmonics. And there's this wording through nanophotonics. You will find out what does it mean. And as you can see, metamaterials is in a gray, so that depends a little bit on the timing. Okay, so you have probably heard that optics and photonics, and what is actually the difference? There's not so big difference, except that optics, there's basically the definition here written. It's a branch of physics which involves the behavior and properties of light, including its interactions with matter and constructions of instruments that use or detect it. So this is kind of mostly manipulation of the light with some matter, like lenses and mirrors and things like that. And what is a photonics? It's also the science of light. But basically it's more about science of light generation. How you generate light, how you detect light, and manipulation of light through emission, transmission, modulation, signal processing, switching. So how the light, it can also change to the material property and back. So emission and absorption are in a big part of that. So there's actually not so big difference, but it's kind of clear difference anyway. And we are more in a photonics size today. Little bit optics is certainly involved. And actually we start from optics, just a little bit to remind you about the basics of optics. So for example, ray optics. So this is what you learn in a basic physics course or in a high school. So you basically define light as a ray. So it goes direct. As you know, usually light don't go behind the corners, except a little bit. And you have this certain laws for lenses and the mirrors and so on. So for example, mirror, you have reflecting surface. And you always have if you have a light coming in, the reflection angle is always same than the incoming angle. This kind of basic laws, which nicely explain, for example, lenses and many optical devices like cameras and so on. And one of the basic laws there in a geometrical optics is a so-called Snell's law. So basically you can almost anything conduct from this or deduce from this law, which means that here you have a refractive index. So every material has a refractive index, which means how the light propagates there. And there's a two medium with indexes N1 and N2. And basically N defines the speed of light. So you know that the speed of light is constant of nature, but that's a constant of nature in a vacuum. But if you have a material, it can slow down. It cannot speed up, but it can slow down. And then you have a velocity there in this medium and velocity of this medium, but actually in this Snell's law, you don't need the velocities. You just need the indexes, and then you need the angle where your light is coming into the interface. And then reflection will happen in an angle theta 2. And these angles are related by this law. So as you see, if the N1 is same than the N2, basically the angles are same also, because there's no interface, there's no refraction. But as soon as the N's differ, the angle starts to differ and your light is diffracted, reflected. What is the word? Refracted. Yes. Okay, and then if you have a lens and you basically have a bunch of arrays coming in, you can apply the Snell's law in this interface and this interface for all the arrays, and you end up so to the situation where all the arrays are meeting at this focal point. So this is exactly what determines the shape of the lens. So it is fabricated so that this happens. And you can calculate the shape by using Snell's law. More people coming, good. And so this is basically, this explains many things. And you can survive long by this kind of description. But if you go, for example, anti-reflective coating, what you can see in this image. So this lens has anti-reflecting coating and this doesn't, and you can see the reflection from a window in front of her. And how this kind of anti-reflective coating has been done, it's a very thin layer of different materials with a different refractive indexes. And these are fabricated exactly how we went 2 weeks ago. So by deposition, some kind of deposition, physical or chemical deposition method. And now each layer is actually thinner than the wavelength of a light. Then you cannot anymore apply this kind of a ray picture. This ray picture does not explain at all what happens here. And this is a totally different kind of explanation. And basically, in this limit, ray optics breaks down. So it's basically the limit of the wavelength. As soon as you are close to wavelength dimensions or below that, certainly these ray optics don't work anymore. And then you have to start about thinking about light as a wave. So basically, we have so-called diffraction and, of course, interference. And if you think that you have a, here you have some kind of wall, this black one. Why my laser pointer is now, okay, now it's back, good. And if you have a hole in a wall and you shine light, and if your hole is bigger than a wavelength, so this can be just any window or so on, what you see is that the light goes through directly. So for example, light coming out from that window behind me, so it's making a shadow on the floor, so in exactly the window shape. So light just goes directly through and you see bright area exactly the same size as this hole. But if your hole is smaller than the wavelength, so here is kind of wavelength is longer than your hole, it means that your light starts to bend. It doesn't go directly anymore, but you kind of have to think this hole as a new light source which emits every direction. And this kind of a wave behavior of a light was first shown by Young's double slit experiment, where you put the light through two slits and you had two waves propagating after that, and you see the interference pattern on the screen. So this was 1801, very beginning of 1800. And how this kind of, let's look the little bit of physics about the interference, because this is such a good to remember. So if you have this kind of situation, so this is our double slit here, and then you have your screen here. And light is coming from a left, and if we zoom in, we have a two slits here, separated by distance d. Now basically, both of these slits can be thought as a source of a light. So both of them emit a ray, or or you can think ray passes through them. And as I can send, if this is narrow enough, basically the ray goes other direction. Let's just choose some point here from a screen. So this is randomly chosen point in this picture. Yeah, it's not saying that all the light is going that direction because it's not. But if we choose some point here, which is distance from a zero, so direct, is L times tangent of this angle. And L is now the distance from a slit to the screen. And of course, this angle here, if you zoom in, it's the same angle than this one here. This is easy to understand from a geometry. Okay, now let's assume that both of these slits have a light coming in. And the light is always sinusoidal wave, if you take a single frequency. So let's assume single frequency. So we have certain frequency, which means certain color of a light. And now we have this light coming from this slit to that point. Also, we have a same light coming from other slit. So we basically sum up this light here. But now this light has traveled a little bit longer. This means that there's a little bit delay which you can mark as a phase difference here, because your time is a little bit longer. So you can mark it if you think that your time is a little bit longer. So you have basically, let's put it correct. So let's put it like this. So you have traveled a little bit longer. But if you calculate this out, this is omega t plus omega times delta t. And then we just define that this is the phase difference. Because that's what it is mathematically. So this is basically just because this light has traveled a little bit longer. And now if you manipulate this, so you just take your mathematical equation book and look how you can combine two signs with this different. There's a T missing. Oops. There should be T, certainly. So omega T and omega T plus the phase difference. So you can manipulate this equation to this form. So it's a 2 times A, where A is just an amplitude, just random amplitude. And this A is same in both, of course, because they come from the same source. So you have one light shining both slits, so they both have equally amount of light coming out. So you come into this form, this 2 times A times cosine half of this phase difference times sine omega T plus half of the wave difference, phase difference. So basically what you end up is that your time dependence is here. So this is sine omega T again, which is a basic form of oscillating light. And then you have a amplitude which depends on this phase difference. So this doesn't depend on the time anymore. So this is just a constant. This rotates or vibrates with a time as both the light sources at the beginning. It has a phase difference just in the between these two. And this is the amplitude, how much light you get to this point. And now we are interested on this amplitude. So we are not interested about how it oscillates. So sine omega T, and what is the phase difference here? That basically you don't easily see when you measure. So we just are interested, what is the amplitude? Because that tells how much light you get there. And now, intensity of light is basically related to the square of this amplitude. And now if we calculate the intensity, double means that the total intensity here, so light coming through from a double slit. And this is the intensity, what comes first, which is basically exactly this A squared. So you now we can compare this A double, is the amplitude, what we just calculated, and we just divide that by original amplitude, so we can get a multiplication for our intensity, our original intensity. So it's basically just this multiplicand is just a square of this. And you divide it by A, so you have taken that away because A is already included here in the intensity. So what you end up is 4 times original intensity cosine squared and this phase difference. Now let's look at this phase difference. So basically, if you think your sign, you remember that if you have some oscillating and you have you put 2 pi, this is actually exactly the same than the original. 2 pi in a radians or 360 degree. And usually we use radians in the physics. So basically, if we look, what is a fraction of this phase difference of this 2 pi, which is a full turn? It basically have to be the same . Maybe I'll draw a little bit. This can be a bit abstract, but it's basically, it's clear. So, you add here 2 pi, you end up to the same phase. And if you think about 2 waves traveling, this should be same, similar waves here. And now if you think other one is delayed by certain phase, so let's put delta phi here, and then we start our wave here. A little bit later. And now if you see these, compare these waves, they are no more at the same point. So here you have a maximum, here you have almost already minimum. So they are kind of canceling each other already. Here they are a little bit adding up. So things are changing. But if you delay this long enough, so that you delay exactly 1 wavelength. So you start here. And of course, wave is continuous forever. Here, the situation is back to this one. These waves are matching here, so you have maximum here, they sum up to even higher maximum. You have minimum at the same point, they sum up even lower minimum. And this same happens here again. So when your phase difference is same than your wavelength, basically there's no change. So we can directly relate that this phase difference compared to the full turn, which returns to the original position is the same than this extra length of your path, which is this one here. To that, compare to the wavelength. So you compare the phase difference to the full turn, and that has to be same than this extra length compared to the wavelength, which is kind of, wavelength is kind of full turn in a picture of a wave. And now this extra length, that's much more easier to calculate, because this is what you can just use a geometry here. And this is just a d, which is a distance between the slits, times the sine of this angle theta, and then you just have a division with a lambda still. So this delta r is d times sine theta. So this is actually exact form for this. But in many cases in optics, especially, people don't need that exact result. So if you think this situation, usually the distance between the slit is like a millimeter or much below, and distance to your screen is a meter. And then you see your interference happening close to this perpendicular value, meaning that your angle is really small. And if the angle is really small, sine is basically same as a tangent. Because tangent of anything, that's basically sine divided by cosine. And if your angle is really small, it means that the cosine is actually almost one. And this is almost just the sine of your angle. And why do we make this kind of approximation? It's because the tangent of this angle is easy to say. It's this distance divided by that distance. So you have a y, which is, okay, so that is missing from a picture. So y is a distance, that's basically y coordinate. Yeah, it is there, yeah. So it's a distance of your point from a zero. Because we have a coordinate y here. And then you have divided by l. And then of course, so tangent theta is y divided by l, and you put that in, you come to this kind of formula, and now you can put this in. So delta phi is a 2 pi times yb over lambda l, and you can plug that in, and you end up to this formula, what you can see here. So this is amplitude, intensity amplitude, so beta or basically intensity of your light at the position y. And y is now distance from the middle. And if you look at this formula, you can see that it's just a periodic. It's always positive because the cosine squared, but it goes to zero and maximum. And the maximum basically for this is one, but then you multiply it four times the original intensity. So basically in the maximum, you get four times more light than your original light. So you're basically increasing. But then you have also this zero positions. So this is basically your pattern, how it looks on the screen. So you have a maximum here, which are much higher than your original intensity, which is this I1. But then you have also these zeros there between. So basically, if you integrate all light up, you have the same amount. The light is not kind of, you are not generating new light, but you are just distributing it a different way. So this is a basic of interference. So you need this also in a later in a course. You go to X-ray diffraction. It's called X-ray diffraction even if it's based on an interference. Don't mind that. It's basically due to it's an interference due to diffraction. So, and what is a diffraction? So here, as you see, let's go a little bit back, not to diffraction yet. But as you see, all these maximums are equal. And basically it continues infinite in theory. Actually it doesn't. And reason for this is a diffraction. So this is, if we now take a single slit and make that much smaller than a wavelength, as I said earlier, that if you have a small slit and light is coming here, it basically radiates all the direction and you can think this as a light source. So all directions are equal. This is true if the slit is really, really small. But if it's just a wavelength or little bit below wavelength, then you have this one much stronger and you have certain directions, emphasis, and certain directions you have a less light. And this is called diffraction. And this is a pattern what you get on the screen. So you have a middle maximum there. It gets all the time wider if you make your slit more narrow. And everything is kind of going outwards if you make your slit more narrow. And at some point, this middle maximum is kind of taking all the angles. And then you are in a situation where the light goes to other directions. But before that, you have this kind of pattern. And if you look intensity of that pattern, you have this middle maximum, which is much, much stronger than the smaller ones. And yes, okay, you can also start to make this wider. What happens is this middle maximum goes narrower and narrower, just opposite. And soon it is actually exactly the shadow of the original slit and you are in the limit of a macroscopic light. And then you start to have this slit same size or bigger than the wavelength, and then you are exactly back to the ray optics. And how you can calculate this kind of thing, we are not going through it now fully, because it's a little bit more complicated issue, but basically you take your small slit and you can divide it by certain periodicity. And then you compare the interference from these points. And then you at the very end, you take a limit that the distance between points is zero. So you take infinite number of points there and calculate the interference of that. And what you end up is exactly that pattern here. This minimum, you can basically calculate pretty easily. And there's just a formula for that. So this means again, the angle from your slit. So what is the angle between this normal and the minimum here? And this is P, which is just a number, 1, 2, 3. It's an integer number. And then the wavelength divided by A, which is the width of your slit. So you can see if you make your slit narrow, these minimums go more far and far and far and so on. And you get all the minimums just by replacing P by 1, 2, 3. So this is 1, 2, 3. And you talk about first order minimum or second order minimum. So what happens in a reality, if you make this double slit, what we discussed here, is that you have actually not equally distributed light from these slits, but you have diffracted light from the slits. And then you have interference of them. So basically, you sum up with this diffraction pattern, which is this one. So here you have a laser light, red laser light going through a single slit, and then you put a second slit next to it, and you get an interference on top of this diffraction pattern. So you have a bow. And this happens in all small slits and small optics. So this is just thinking now light as a wave. But what kind of wave it is? It's an electromagnetic wave. And basically, there's a theory for electromagnetic waves. So Maxwell's equations, which are these ones here, and they explain it all, at least until quantum limit. And even there, they are obeyed always. So basically, you can use these equations to calculate anything. And the wavelength of visible light is around 390 nanometers up to 700 nanometers. So 700 is a red and the 390 is a blue. And also, you should remember that, okay, here is your electric field. So I was, here I used sine as a wave. So you have a sine wave, but usually this is actually expressed as this kind of exponential. And you have a complex number here. And this is basically so-called Euler's rule. So this you can write as a cosine omega t plus I sine omega t. So this you can always write in this form. And here the complex part is here in the middle of sine, front of sine. And this is just to make a kind of calculations more easy. And all the formulas comes easier if you do this. At the very end, you take a real part of your electric field. And this is basically your light. Imaginary part is just there to help the calculations. But this is what you measure if you measure your light. And what you end up is, if you take only real part, so you take this one, you end up exactly the same what we had. Okay, we had a sine, now there's a cosine, that's just a 90 degree phase difference, nothing else. So that's why this kind of marking here. And then you have a magnetic field, which is perpendicular, so to your electric field, and then basically you can define K vector, which is a momentum of your light. So this is a direction where you are going, and it appears here. So instead of this omega, so actually this is there's no time dependence here, this is just a spatial description, and this K, it gives you the wavelength and a direction. And this K, this wave vector, that's a perpendicular to the electric field and perpendicular to the magnetic field. So it's, you have this kind of a finger rule. So K, electric field and magnetic field. So this is kind of wave we are dealing with. But light is also a particle, a photon. You know this light dualism. So you can describe it as a wave, or you can describe it also as a particle if you go to quantum limit. And this particle is called photon, and it's basically wave packet. That's the one way to describe it. So it's a short packet of this kind of waves, which propagates in space. And here you have a wavelength also defined. And basic kind of equations for a light. So here, this is refractive index. We defined it already. And it's basically defined, so C is a speed of light in a vacuum, which is constant always. And that divided by the speed of light in that material. So this refractive index exactly tells how much the light is slowed down. So it's always slowed down, so basically this is always bigger than one. And then it's, you can also define it like this. There, this is a dielectric constant, and this is a permittivity acting on a magnetic field. No permeability, magnetic response. And usually for most materials, this is equals to one. Usually people don't care, even write it in this formula, because it's in most of our material, it's just one. It's just some very strong magnetic materials where it's a little bit different than the one. And so, and this is, ER is a dielectric constant of a material, or relative permittivity. So basically electronic response. Then you have a frequency of your light, and this is this basic wave form that a frequency times wavelength have to be the speed of your wave, no matter is it light or mechanical oscillations or whatever oscillations. This holds always. And then from these you can already combine that the wavelength in a material with some refractive index you can calculate by wavelength in the vacuum divided by refractive index. And from this, you can easily now define also the wave vector. So it's 2 pi over the wavelength. So kind of inverse of your wavelength. And this is the momentum. So you remember in the mechanics, momentum is mv. But now the momentum is related to k. So actually it's h bar times k, yeah. Unfortunately, this wave vector is the only thing which has a little bit two type of definitions. In some places, the 2 pi is omitted. So it's just inverse of your wavelength. But this is a physical definition, so that's why 2 pi, and that's why we have h bar and not h. But in some spectroscopy, due to historical reasons, you are forgetting this 2 pi, and then you usually talk about wave number. So then you don't care about the direction, but you just take a value of your k, not the direction. And then this is 2 pi is omitted. And then of course you have to use h. Usually it's clear from a situation. And if you look these kind of formulas and apply these for a light coming to some kind of interface, so you have here different materials, material one and material two. And here's an interface between, and this plane of incidence means exactly this plane what is formed of your light and the interface. And some part of a light is reflected following this reflection law. So the angle, incoming angle is the same than reflection angle. That has to always hold. Some of that light is refracted through the interface, obeying Snell's law. And if you combine these two laws and these Maxwell's equations, you can end up with the Fresnel equations, which tell all how much light is reflected and how much is transmitted. So R means reflected and T means transmitted. And here is you can also define the polarization of a light. So maybe I forgot to mention, but polarization light is basically the direction of your electric field. In a picture, electric field is perpendicular, so this is kind of vertical, I mean. So this is kind of vertically polarized light. But if you have interface, there's a definition so-called S and P polarized light. So S polarized light means that your electric field is pointing like in this picture. So it's kind of perpendicular to the plane of incidence, always. It cannot change here. Polarization will survive in a reflection and in a refraction. And this is so-called S polarization. You can have also P polarized light, which means that it's exactly along the plane of incidence. And in this case, actually, it little bit changes the direction, as you can see here, because it always have to be perpendicular to the K vector. So here it changes. And exactly due to this reason, these formulas are a little bit different for P polarized light and S polarized light. Actually, these look pretty much similar, but the refractive index is a little bit different for P polarized and S polarized. That makes a difference. So light is behaving differently. For example, S polarized is much more reflected and much less transmitted or refracted than the P polarized. P polarized is mostly refracted and a little bit reflected. So that's why, for example, if you are by boat and your sun is basically hitting your eyes very badly from the water. So this, and this water is kind of reflected, reflecting the sun. And since it's mostly reflecting S polarized light, so you should basically wear this kind of polarized sunglasses so you can get away only the reflected light, not the direct light. So that's why when you are with a boat, you should have a polarized sunglasses, not just dark glasses. So this is famous Fresnel equations. They tell you how the light is reflected and transmitted. So this is expansion from Snell's law, much more accurate. But then there's also another famous law. This is kind of explaining also everything. This is still kind of a, you can think this is as an expansion of a ray optics here. But it comes actually from this wave optics, these laws. But if you think there's a Fermat's principle, which telling you that the path taken by a ray between two points, so here A and B, and we have an interface between, is a path that you can travel fastest, or takes least time. And this holds actually for everything. And sorry, I just now realized this is in a Finnish, but basically you take a time how long it takes from a point one to a point two, so from here to here. And this is a distance divided by speed in a both in a this part, which is a, so this is a distance one, and then you have a distance two. So both you can take the distance divided by speed, you end up, because you know, you remember that the speed is C divided by refractive index, so speed of light in a vacuum divided by refractive index. And then the time depends on this distance. So from geometry, you can easily calculate this distance. And then it's now showing here. And now you sum these up or put here, you get a total time. And now you want to find the minimum of this time. And of course, in a mathematical formulation to say, to find the minimum, it means that you find the zero point of your derivative. That should be minimum or maximum, and you can check which one it is. So we take a derivative of this sum of these two distances multiplied by refractive index. So we take a derivative of this formula and look where it is zero. And if we just manipulate these equations, we end up to Snell's law. So this gives you exactly the same law than what we defined from our Fresnel equations.